Nerd Night, Ann Arbor.
Good evening, nerds. I've waited forever to say that. Okay, so my name is Sagar, and I added a guide to pronunciation in case you guys need that. And I'm here to tell you what makes a Switch click ass. Talk about a clickbait. Before we start, so two warnings. There will be bad jokes, and I think I started with that. And this talk will likely ruin your car for you, okay? So I am an engineer, and if you haven't guessed that from my accent already, if you meet an engineer, they can be either doctors or engineers. Our second speaker today will tell you about things that make you sick, and I'll tell you about things that make you click, all right? So my title until recently, as Shoshana told you, was Vehicle Harmony Engineer, okay? Now, I don't know what images that evokes in your mind, but the first time I heard that title, the images that came to my mind were things like that. I thought I would be running a commune of hippie cars. And if you guys have seen Wild Wild Country, don't let Indians run your communes, right? But that wasn't my job. So what was my job? See, every automotive company, at its core, they design and put together world's most complicated puzzles, right? They are puzzle makers. But the thing is, every piece of this puzzle is made by a different supplier in different countries, sometimes even different continents, right? But when you as a consumer buy a car, you want to feel like all of that came from one place. So a lot of what the automotive companies do is design a set of elaborate rules that the suppliers can follow, such that when they make a part, they all feel like they came from one place, right? So you have rules for everything. We have teams that tell you what shade of black your plastic has to be. They'll tell you whether it should be glossy or matte and exactly what kind of matte and how the part should look, all of that, right? So there are rules for everything. And my team was a team that designed some of these rules. In particular, we decided how things should, how things should look, how they should sound, and how they should feel. The first part, fairly straightforward, how it should look. In particular, we did one part of the look. So you see all the blue backlighting that you see on the switches. Our job was to tell the suppliers exactly what shade of blue that should be, how bright that should be, how that should dim when it's daytime outside, how dark it should be when it's night outside, things like that. So fairly straightforward. The second was how things should sound. So every time you press the switch or you turn your knob, how that should sound, how loud that should be, how quiet that should be, things like that. Still straightforward. The third one stumped me, though. I remember asking in my job interview, what do you mean, how should it feel? Guys don't do well with feelings. So I don't know what I didn't know what that part meant, right? But let me explain to you. Let's look at three things we all use every day. We all have cell phones. They have some sort of volume buttons on them, on the side, push buttons. We all have car fobs. They have buttons on them, again, push buttons. And we all use keyboards. All three are push buttons, right? Intuitively, we know that all of them feel very different. But if I ask you, what do you mean? How does your keyboard feel? You might say things like clicky, but I can't tell you how clickier that is compared to that. And what is clicky for you might not be clicky for me, right? Let's look at some knobs. We all have used volume controls. Some of us have Nest thermostat. And we have used the gear shifter knobs that everyone hates, right? All of them feel very different, but it's hard to specify what that different feel is, right? When I go to a supplier, though, I can't tell them, make me a switch that feels like a MacBook keyboard and make me a knob that feels like some volume knob. I need to be more precise with them, right? So how do I do that? How do you describe and measure feel? Turns out, it's old Newton to the rescue. What's the one law that everyone remembers from school? Newton's third law, right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Turns out that's all you need. With any switch, you apply force on it. The switch offers you a reaction. That's something we can measure. The other thing that happens when you press down on a switch is it moves. All switches have some sort of dome underneath it. Maybe it's a metal dome, it's a rubber dome. So as you press down on the switch, the reaction that it offers you also changes. So, turns out, you can draw a plot, because that's what engineers love to do. You can draw a plot with force on the y-axis and the travel on the x-axis, and that gives you a unique plot for every switch. And that's something that tells you what the switch should feel like. And there are machines out there that help us measure that. We can measure what any switch looks like. It will give you a fancy plot for each of them. And based on that, you can describe the switch. Now, I thought hard about, are all nodes good at understanding plots? I mean, I don't know, it's a thin line. See what I did there? Did that cross a line? I don't know. So instead, let's look at what makes a good roller coaster. Don't answer that. We live in opinionated times. So let me answer for you. So this is Sagar's theory of what makes a good roller coaster. All right? You need a good build-up. Okay? That's where all your anticipation is building. That's where your heartbeat is going up. You're checking if your harness is fitted or not. By the way, that's the wrong time to do that. Next comes the height, right? That's what describes what your roller coaster is. You're feeling all the rush while you're on top. You're looking around. You're excited. And the height is what makes a roller coaster exciting. And finally, the drop. This is the moment of adrenaline, right? You're feeling all the rush. This is what makes a roller coaster the roller coaster. And yeah, there are twists and turns after that, but let's ignore facts for now. So this is what makes a good roller coaster, right? Turns out switches are no different. You have, as I said, you have force on the y-axis, travel on the x-axis. You are here when you start. As you start pushing down on the switch, the dome starts offering you resistance, so the force keeps going up. You reach a point where the dome under the switch collapses, and it takes the fall. And the answer to my question, what makes a switch click ass, it's that drop. Okay. So whenever you feel a click in the switch, it's basically the dome underneath giving way. Now, I'm going to pass these two props around. They're both the same, so I'll pass one on each side. There are a couple of things you'll notice on it. As you go from left to right, you will notice that the travel of the switch increases. As you go from top to bottom, the force required to press down on the switch changes. And then the third thing I want you to notice is the size. The switches on the left are much smaller, the ones on the right are larger. And then also notice how the sound that you hear when you actuate this changes. I'll pass this around. One on each. All right. So as I said, you need a good build-up to make a good switch. You need a good height, and you need a good drop. And that together is how you describe exactly what a switch feels like. If I change any of that, that's what changes how you'll perceive the switch, all right? Rotary knobs, on the other hand, are like driving on Michigan roads, right? You see all the ups and downs? So every time you rotate a knob, you'll feel the detents in it. You feel the click, 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 click. That is basically what you're feeling. You feel all the peaks. We call that as peak torque. We can define, because it's a rotary knob, instead of force, you now have a torque, right? And because, again, it's a knob, instead of travel, you now have degrees as the travel there. As you rotate a knob, the torque, the resistance that you feel goes up and down. And we can describe that using peak torque, which controls the most effort that you put in, the torque drop, that's the click that you feel every time. And then we can also describe the detent to detent angle. So together, these describe how a knob feels like. Now, these are two examples that I gave, and these are just for push buttons and rotary knobs. For any kind of switch, may that be your wiper controls or your window switches, for every switch, you can draw a similar plot of what the effort looks like and what the switch travels. And together, they tell you what that switch feels like. And based on that, we can describe any switch to any supplier, and they can make a part that feels exactly the same. So that tells us what to specify. But how do you decide how much to specify, right? There are a couple of considerations. First, how should the switch work? This describes our first ballpark at what the effort should look like. If you're making a volume control, you need multiple controls to be able to adjust volume from 0 to 100. But if you're making a knob to change your PRND, your gear shifter, you just need 5 positions, right? So that describes how you specify your switch. The second is, what safety considerations do we need to meet? if it's a knob that changes my gears, I want it to have a higher effort versus a volume knob, which can be much lower effort. So that informs my decisions. We need to look at what our suppliers can manufacture. Not all efforts are within the realm that suppliers can manufacture. And the switch should also last the entire lifetime a person can use a car. So the switch needs to stand 1 million activations, 2 million activations, things like that. So we need to make sure we specify things that someone can make. And we need to make sure we avoid error states. We don't want the switch to feel loose. We don't want it to feel flimsy. We want to avoid error states. Finally, we care about what the users like. What do our users like or not like? What are the reviews saying? All the forms that you guys fill after you buy a car, someone actually does read them, I promise. Right? What is the media saying? And they are opinionated. And what do we learn from customer clinics? We do all sorts of user studies. We go to our customers. We make them use our interfaces and see how they like it. And by the way, you have very few customers telling you, oh, my effort is not right. You have to listen to what they're saying. They might say things like, this knob feels cheap. Or the reviews might say, every time I go to use my touchscreen, I end up turning my hazard lights, which tells us the efforts might be too light. So you need to read between the lines to see what the customer is saying, right? But you might ask, aren't switches and knobs all going away from cars? Isn't it all about the touchscreen nowadays? Well, it is. But that brings a new set of questions. The first question with touchscreens is, how responsive do they need to be, and how do I measure that responsiveness, right? The other questions that we might have, you all have used microwaves. It has switches that don't press when you click on them, but you're much more likely to hear a beep every time you press a switch. Turns out, audible sense is an important part of how we perceive feel, and we can play around with that acoustic feedback to decide what a switch should feel like. The other part, if you guys have iPhones, if you guys go on the screen that adjusts the alarm times, every time you rotate through any of the time wheels, you feel a haptic feedback in your phone. You feel the click, 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 click going, right? Someone at Apple spent a long time calibrating that feel to make it look like you're adjusting a mechanical wheel, and it's not trivial. It takes a lot of effort to do that. Even if you click that snooze button, which I think you do, it takes a lot of time to adjust the haptic feedback to make it look like you're actually pressing down on a switch. The final type is what Apple does with their keypads. If you had bought a MacBook, say, in 2011, 2012, every time you press down on the keypad, the switch actually moved. But what they've done recently is every time you press on that keypad, nothing's actually moving, but there's a taptic engine in there that's creating a feedback that makes it feel like you're actually pressing down on something. So those technologies now allow us to disconnect the effort from the feedback that you get. And that opens up an entire new world on how we can dial in switch feel. We can even make the users choose what they like. So the newer technologies brings their own set of challenges, but they also bring in possibilities that we are exploring, and we love to do that. Now, I get it, right? I mean, switches may turn on a lot of things, but turning on people is not one of them. So why am I telling you about all of this, right? The products that we love are an outcome of decisions, right? There's a lot of thought, there's a lot of action that goes into this. People put in a lot of effort obsessing about the smallest of decisions, and this is true for every product that you're using. Sometimes when they do the job right, the result will very likely be that the users won't even notice it. The fact that you are listening to me right now, not noticing the chair that you're sitting on, that means people who designed the chair, people who designed your beer bottles, did a fantastic job. The fact that you guys can look at me and be in this atmosphere tells me Fernando is doing a fantastic job controlling the lights. But we don't even think about it, right? So people put in a lot of effort behind things that you might not notice it. Nobody noticed how good Apple's keyboards felt till they came up with the new MacBooks that ruined the keyboards, and now everyone hates them, right? And no one said thank you before. So think about the decisions that went into the products that you love, and if you are lucky enough to be in a position where you can make those decisions, put a bit more effort into that, someone might thank you, like me. All right? That's all I had. Thank you. Questions? Questions?
You blew everyone's mind.
I hope so.
We're just Is that managed the same way? Are you measuring the same metrics if you're working on a touchscreen rather than a traditional switch?
Okay, so the question was, are you measuring the same metrics with a touchscreen, and do you measure it the same way? The answer is no. It's very different parameters, right? With traditional switches, as I said, you're putting in effort and something moves. With touchscreen, nothing moves. So we can't use our traditional force sensors to measure what we're doing, but we need to look at other technologies, like how does a touchscreen work? How does it detect feel? How can you calculate the time between when someone touches it and when the screen responds? So it brings a whole set of challenges. And feel in itself is a fantastic feel if you think about, right? We don't think about it much, but when you touch wood or when you touch metal, by touch you can tell they're two different materials. But how can you tell that, right? I mean, even if they're exact same surface finish, you can tell when you're touching wood versus metal. How does that work? So there are things like thermal conductivity that tells you you're touching a metal because it's absorbing heat from you. There are a lot of things that go into touch. So it's a different set of challenges with touchscreens. It's nothing like push buttons. The question was, is touch all about personal preference, or do you see some sort of trends, right, within population set? So that's a good question, because in general with push buttons, we see all these companies, all our OEMs are independently working on push buttons. They are not using each other's data. But you see over time that they all have landed into similar zones, similar effort ranges. And they're all based on customer research across countries. So yes, there is some variation, it's a spectrum, but you do see the mean of the population around the same zone. And I'm not allowed to tell you that, my boss is here. But they are all in the same zone. So that there are trends you see, and the thing with efforts is, the trends that you see is, for things that you tend to press a lot, like your keyboard, you don't want that to be high effort because you want to glide over it. But things like your hazard switch, you want it to be higher effort because the risk of actuating that by mistake is much more embarrassing, right? So we see trends like that, but you do see everyone coalescing around the same zone. Then the question was, do you prefer a car with all buttons or a touchscreen? I think the answer is you kind of need to be in between. I feel like we can do with more touchscreens than where we have been. Just because it's like how your smartphone, right? Instead of having a keyboard that was fixed there, the moment that went away, it allowed us to do a lot more with the phone. So that definitely helps. But I feel there are things in a car that should not move to a touchscreen. Your wiper controls, your gear shifter should not move to a touchscreen. So I feel like the answer is somewhere between. So more touchscreen than we have now, but less than where some of the OEMs are. Right. So I think the question was, if a product feels cheap, does that mean they have not put enough effort into it? I would say it's hard to answer that, because I think the slide I had said products are an outcome of decisions. The actual answer is products are an outcome of negotiations, right? In any OEM, in auto company, you have all sorts of tensions that are playing around to make the product what it is. So sometimes we as a team might put effort into getting the feel just right, but maybe it costs too much, or maybe there's no space to play around with it. So there are some times when you end up in a space that's not optimal from a field point of view, but it's the right answer for a systems point of view. So I wouldn't say if you find one bad switch in a car, that doesn't mean the OEM never looked at it. But if all their cars feel bad, then yeah, it's probably they're cutting corners. So look at the trends.
This program was recorded on January 16th, 2020 at Live 102 South First Street, Ann Arbor, Michigan.